Welcome to another episode of Attention Confidential, the podcast where we explore self-awareness, curiosity, and advocacy in a safe container. What does that mean exactly, safe? In my work and personal brand and style, trust is serious business. So is confidentiality. I believe in agency and choice and privacy. This show empowers guests by inviting them to speak freely and openly while protecting their personal details, if that helps make them feel safe. In support of safety, please be advised that this podcast contains explicit language and direct or indirect references to material which some listeners may find triggering. Topics are highly personal and intimate, likely to touch on themes including but not limited to abuse, bigotry, body image, disability, mental health, sexuality, and trauma. Please prioritize your safety and the safety of those around you who may be exposed to this material, especially young folks. Please also note this is an ongoing project, which means I am actively engaged in learning while creating. The format, the tools, and skills to produce this material are all new to me. As I build and refine, I ask that you understand there may be kinks along the way. Production snafus, awkward edits, background noise, and because transparency is one of my core values, I should also share that I am using software that includes enhanced features to simplify the editing and post-production process. Any editing of this content, however, this original, organic, human-generated content, is done so at my discretion, specifically to optimize sound quality, not to manipulate, omit, or alter any substantive material in the recordings. All guests have a chance to review the material before it is published so they can be assured that their voices and stories are held and shared with care, treated as sacred things to preserve and pass on. You can find more details about each guest and relevant resources in the show notes for each episode. Hey, weirdos and queerdos, and welcome to another episode of Attention Confidential. I am your host, Maggie Green, here to remind you that your voice matters and your stories are safe with me. All guests in this first season, aka the Tragic Optimist Tour, have chosen to entrust me with some of their most intimate personal details. I consider that an incredibly generous gift, and for that, I am forever grateful. Today's guest has also chosen to share their identity. Before I tell you who they are, here are a few things to know about them. This person uses he, him pronouns and has a long-standing love affair with music that began in childhood. He is a gifted IT engineer, composer, a pianist, and is obsessed with all things art, math, and science. Additionally, fun little behind-the-scenes fact for you here, he is the person who created the brilliant theme music for this very show. In late 2024, he experienced a life-changing diagnosis that rocked his entire world. His name is Christopher. Christopher, I am thrilled to have you on the show. Thank you so much for being here. Would you like to take a few moments to introduce yourself, tell listeners who you are?
Sure. Hey, everyone. My name's Christopher. Glad to be here. So a little about me. I have been a classical pianist for over 40 years. And as Maggie stated, late 2024, diagnosis Meniere's disease. Still unclear what it is, where it came from, if it even is that. But lost a significant amount of my hearing, and the tinnitus is absolutely horrid. It's horrid. My friends know, people who know me, music was my life. That was my identity. And then, you know, when I lost this, I had to find a new structure to my artistic talents, I guess, in a different way, or see if I even have a structure for different artistic expressions. So it was very difficult to create this new structure and still be me, but with a different identity.
Thank you for sharing. I am really happy that you brought up this identity piece. I think that's something that's going to be coming up in our conversation today, as well as the structure concept as well. One thing, I have an opportunity to educate folks. You know, you and I know a little bit more about this maybe than the average person. Who knows who's listening on the other end. I would love if you could just even a sentence or two describe to people what the experience, first of all, what is Meniere's disease? We can Google it and I encourage folks to do that. But from your experience, what are, you mentioned the significant hearing loss and you also mentioned tinnitus. What is tinnitus and what does that feel like?
So physically, there's no pain or association with this. It is a hearing loss. And what I incorrectly thought my tinnitus got louder, that's incorrect. It's because my hearing got less, the tinnitus appears to be louder. So that's how those little correlations happen. It's having your perfect hearing and then your hearing's gone for a month or two, and then you'll have a day where it's kind of okay-ish, and then you'll have another month or two or three with absolutely horrible hearing. And I'm talking 80% loss. I've got, my hearing aids. They help. They play this audio to kind of help with the tinnitus, which is that loud, incessant ringing that just never, ever stops. So the hearing aids help a little. Fun fact, I learned from some of my friends that they thought everybody had that ringing in their ears. They did not know that it was actually a condition.
Interesting. I have one sibling. He's younger than I am, my brother, who was in the armed forces for several years, and as a result of that experience, now has persistent tinnitus. It's disruptive in all kinds of ways. It's trying to communicate with him, really a tough experience. I cannot even possibly imagine what it could even be like to lose something. A sense that is so tied to.
That's who I was for 40 years. I'm still trying to figure it out to even put a way to describe what it feels like. It was so bad. I was in a 9-week mental health outpatient program. It just, regular therapy was not cutting it, and I needed more. When you have the love, the passion, the thing that got you through life, got you through, horrible abuse, mental health, everything. To have that ripped away from you in a split second, I mean, it fucked me up severely. Part of me is dead. Part of me's gone. And mourning that on top of the hearing problems, it's still a struggle. I mean, we're only barely a year, year and a half into this trying to navigate it, but here we are.
First of all, so grateful that you're willing to share all of this, so personal, so just life-changing, right? Really sensitive. Obviously, a person's medical details, like, they're protected. These are certainly personal shares. So I just want to say thank you for here. Also, I want to mention you brought up mental health. As you're sharing, there's like the physical implications and the impact of that. How has this impacted your mental health? So there's a physical aspect, and then there's the internal experience as well. How is that going? What have you learned about yourself?
My ear canals have been painful and throbbing as long as I can remember having a memory in my head. My ears have always throbbed. So my hearing aids, wearing them is very uncomfortable. It's great because I get some hearing back, but then it's horrible because it makes the throbbing worse. But yeah, the emotional pain, that damage is still being done. Like, it's not finished, to be honest. It's not, since we're being honest, it's not finished. It's still like that wound is still being cut open. It's still opening. I mean, it's 40 plus years of who I was, who I am, 40 plus years of that, just being ripped. And due to the squealing in my ears, music doesn't sound the same anymore. As an example, I'm sitting here staring at the keyboard in front of me. When I hear any sound, people talking, car horns, anything, a dog barking, anything, I have this other pitch that's on top of it just squealing. So let's just say my voice is a beautiful G. Okay, now let's say my tinnitus is a G sharp. It's right here. So every single time someone who has a voice that's close to that frequency, that is what I hear. It's like Charlie Brown's mom talking. You can understand the words, but the audio is absolutely distorted crap.
Think about challenges with audio processing, which is something I do have experience with, and like conflicting tones, pitches, frequencies and pace, cadence, all of that. If there's like simultaneous two or more, it's painful.
Yeah.
You're facing that every day from every possible angle.
It's exhausting. It is so exhausting. And I couldn't help it, but complain daily. And then I was like, I can't keep complaining about this every day because no one's going to want to be around me. But I had to find a new way to process this, waking up every day to a different sound, waking up every day of hearing one thing for 40 something years and to now waking up and hearing a completely distorted life around me, perception, everything is different because everything sounds different. What I call the universe's great fuck you to me in this cosmic joke of Meniere's is the pitch that I hear is an A. And as musicians know, we all tune to A440. That's the note we tune to. Now, the tinnitus is so incredibly high pitched, it is not the A that you can play on a piano and hear it. It doesn't go that high. But it's akin to, from what I'm being told and from what I remember, back in the day, you could turn on an old TV and without any audio, you can still know that TV's on because you hear that high-pitched squeal, kind of like the old flashes on a camera charging, that high-pitched squeal. Right when it gets to the top of the highest squeal, go a little higher and then go a little higher. And from there, just go a hair more higher, and then you have the sound that I hear 24/7. If I'm awake, that's what I hear. The only time I don't hear it is when I'm asleep. I'm kind of finding some humor in it because I'm able to find things that I didn't really pay attention to what pitch they make before, like compressors, engines, refrigerators, air conditioners, fans, blowers, things like that, all seem to be around the B natural, B flat pitch. That's what note they resonate. And I'm finding different things that kind of, in a way, harmonize with the tinnitus. It's very rare, but when it does, it just kind of makes me laugh. So it's just trying to find a new way to deal with having my own tuning fork for everything. You know, it's just finding a new way to handle it. And finding humor, which is usually what I do best, is how I've been using it, really.
It makes me want to learn more. I have to tell you, and listeners, you may be in this same boat. I am not educated in any way as far as music, musical theory, any of that. And I really get the sense, like, clear, like, references throughout this conversation. And we're talking about physical health, we're talking about mental health, and there's this tie to music, this tie to this hybrid art and science, right? So for the magnifying glass, I know you had mentioned this concept of structure earlier. I think this is your chance to maybe tell us the relationship between structure and music. What do you want to share today?
There's so much in my head to talk about this that it's so hard to pick one thing. But, you know, when you make music, you are within some boundaries. There's a structure, there's, you know, framework, whatever you want to call it, that you must stay within. Now, you can go out of that framework, right? Even going out of that framework, you're just going into another framework. It's kind of hard to explain, but they're kind of paradoxes. You leave one framework, you go into another one, but you're still not really out of a framework. You're just going into a different set of rules.
I'm thinking about the concept of anatomy. There's like anatomy and physiology of like the human being in general. Each one of us is different, but we're all kind of made up of the same parts. So tell us about like the anatomy of a song. Like what is that?
There's actually two parts, big parts to me, the anatomy of songs. One of them, or sorry, three parts. Sorry, three parts, the trifecta. And that is the actual music itself, the accompaniment, the lyrics, most are just poems, and then the visual, because most have music videos. They're not just, you know, the band standing on a stage playing. And those three things, changing any one of them, at least one of them, will completely change how it sounds and feels and comes across to you. And the thing that, even though everybody's different and has different types of music they like, they don't like, they prefer this or that, there's a certain structure. It doesn't work on everybody, but quite a few people. There are certain structures, frameworks in music that we use that we are able to make you feel a way that we want you to feel by simply choosing a different, say, chord progression or a different set of chords from a different key that we borrowed from, something like that.
Can you share an example?
Yeah. So real quick. So every song is in a specific key. Each key has its own rules. We'll call those framework boundaries. And you kind of stay within them if you want things to sound, quote unquote, good, or how you want it to sound to other people. So for instance, we're going to just real quick in the key of F major. So... okay, F major. Yeah, so they have these rules, you do them, and somebody on TikTok, you know, took the rules of one key, we're just in one key, the key of F, and using four or five different chords and taking the most simplest of melodies like this. That's it. Those five notes, took that and made this, you know, just put some basic chords to it from a key from this one structure, a framework, and you get this beautiful, you might recognize it. And that was on TikTok going around forever, but changing just a little bit of that, can changing the framework, stay within the same framework of the key, but changing how you play the structure of the rhythm or the structure of the melody can completely change how a song feels. So like, for instance, this one, instead of doing that, we could, what they call arpeggiate, just go some runs of the chords up and down. See, and it just gives that more of a, ooh, like a lovey-dovey feeling. Same notes, same chords, same everything in that structure. I'm just changing the rhythm to make you feel a different way. Oh, here's a classic one. Christina Aguilera's Hurt. Do you know that?
Anybody alive in the 90s, early 2000s.
Absolutely loves that song, okay? And it's just so haunting. It's just, it's beautiful. Well, that exact framework, okay, the exact same framework, but in a different key, but still the same framework. We're just in a different key, so it's going to sound different. It's just like in a different key. So, for instance, we were in F, 1-4-5-1. Well, now we're going to be, so we were in E minor. Now we're just going to go to A minor. Okay. So the same chords, the same structure, the same everything that Christina Aguilera uses is also in this song. See if you recognize this. Recognize that? Can you believe those two songs use the exact same framework and sound completely different? And then there's just one more classic one, just in case, for whatever reason, someone doesn't know Stairway to Heaven. Here's another one. So Pentatonix took Little Drummer Boy, classic holiday song that everybody knows, and they substituted some chords to give it a little flavor. So instead of... they changed it up to... they just added two extra chords, two minor chords, to make it sound a little more, kind of pull at your heartstrings, more gloomy, Christmassy, overcast kind of feeling day. So take that concept, right? Little Drummer Boy. Well, someone took the same framework, those same exact chords, and let's see if you can hear that song in here. Let's see if I can remember it. You know that? Same chord structure, and you get Halo from Little Drummer Boy. And it's just, It's I'm fascinated how we can, all of this stuff, quote unquote, has been done before. Every band, every musician, every composer has played and done every combination there is. But yet we can still make something that sounds completely different, but still using the same structure that has always been there. And trying to figure out my new framework and structure navigating this hearing thing is, it's a challenge, but I'm fascinated by it. If it can happen in music, it can happen in my life with my music. I like a challenge.
Well, especially for you, and you know, like, music can still be part of your life. It obviously is still part of your life. Like, this is knowledge, tools, and resources that, you know, you're repackaging or repurposing or whatever.
Like, oh yeah, the theory's there for sure. Yeah.
Christopher, question for you, and listeners, think about this as well. If you could compose something, if you could create a piece of music, a piece, a movement, a message, what would you want it to express?
Pain, 100% pain. Yeah, there's a lot to get out. There's a lot to get out. If I could, and I mean, I do still kind of compose. The situation's a little difficult now, but yeah, there's a lot to get out still. And I'm curious what it's going to sound like once it's out.
Kind of along those lines, if I were to ask myself that question, I would say anger. I feel like that is the emotion that I'm least comfortable with. I don't have like safe access to it, I feel like. But also communicating it to other people, just experiencing it in general, you know, in all the traditional ways that I've been shown, traditional and dysfunctional ways that I've been shown expressions of anger, like, it would be interesting to bottle that as a metaphor or like channel that, you know, sometimes it's too big.
Yeah.
For words. You had a suggestion for maybe some homework for listeners to take in this new knowledge and put it into practice or once they are done with the episode.
Yeah, just, you know, something a little fun to see if they can figure it out. If you're familiar, well, even if you have your own two songs, if you already have some songs that you know, you can use those as an example. But if not, a perfect example would be the Nine Inch Nails song Hurt versus Johnny Cash's cover of the same song Hurt. Can you, you know, watching both of the, well, and it's up to you. You can either just listen to each one and then watch them, or you can make your decision without the video at all. I will tell you, spoiler, the videos in each version do make a difference to the song, a big difference. So take that as you will, but. Can you describe, you know, in detail the contrast, the difference between the two songs, both musically and, you know, visually, if you do the video, you know, does it make you feel a certain way? Does one version make you feel this way versus one making you feel this way, and why? You know, is it the music? Is it the scenery in the background? And does the video itself, either alone or with the music, change how you feel? See if you can figure that out. It's just kind of fun to sometimes pick apart a song, but then sometimes it ruins the song for you. So do with that what you will.
That is going to be fun to check out. Definitely remember both songs. Same song, same lyrics, right? There's that consistency across the two pieces, but very different experiences. Christopher, we talked a lot about music. We've talked some about mental health. We've talked about emotional experiences and learning to retool and reskill when you're presented with different barriers and challenges. So the megaphone is your opportunity to really lean into your passion, something that is possibly unique to you, something that you wanted to talk about today, like aligning your actions with your values. What are a couple of your values? What are you most connected to? And how do those play out in some of the decisions that you make?
So fuck the patriarchy and, you know, fuck capitalism, definitely against those. I try to keep my money, when I have it, out of the hands of people who do horrible things and in the hands of people who are struggling to do good things. I am definitely for equal rights for everybody. I am definitely for everybody having rights and access to the same things as everybody. Like, everybody should be, everything should be equal. Like, that's just, everyone should be equal. Sadly, we're not there yet, but that's where we should be. That's what I believe.
Capitalism. So I'm with you there. I'm in this interesting spot, right? With having not a whole lot of economic power, but maybe some. You'd mentioned, you know, money specifically, right? When you have it, making these really intentional decisions about where put those dollars. I would love to learn more for listeners who might find themselves in a situation like mine where, you know, they recognize that they have some economic power, however limited it may be. They also recognize that, you know, money talks. That is where the power is. And so what little power we have, how do we wield that? How do we use it, leverage it in a way that aligns with our values? So maybe tools and resources out there. How do you even approach this process? Because we are so tied to so many different companies. What do you suggest?
It's very difficult in the tech industry. And everybody, if anyone just said, I don't use technology, you're part of this. Because in some way or another, you're tied to it in some way. From the smallest thing of a pack of toothbrushes or whatever, it's touched a boat, a shipping container, an 18-wheeler, you know, an airplane. Everything comes from somewhere. And unfortunately, in the technology industry, it is very difficult to find places that are not bad people. It's very hard. The easiest way is to search online for the companies and just do your own research. Read about the owners, read about the stock or the shareholders, read about what they support. You know, typically that's public information where they spend their money, and you can see where these people are spending their money. And if it's not in places that align with you, then don't spend your money there. For things like when I'm out grocery shopping or something, there's a, and no, I am not sponsored by this app at all. They don't even know I'm talking about them. There's an app that I use on my phone called Boycat, B-O-Y-C-A-T. And you can either search for products or you can scan the barcode on products, and it will search that company and tell you all about that company, if they do bad things and how and where, so that you can avoid said product. I'll tell you what, I don't think there was anything I scanned in the grocery store that did not somehow come up to something bad. And that's just where we are now. Unfortunately, that's life. But it is a good app to scan for other things. You know, it's a great app for that.
It is. And I actually have an update for you, Christopher. And part of sharing about a piece of technology, again, there, I think maybe there's some irony. We're talking about the tech industry and there's this resource. There is a big difference between this application, not only in its mission and purpose, but the way it's sort of managed. The user influence is huge. So when I was thinking about that, I was thinking about possible limitations, which we might talk about. But I wanted to bring up to you, Christopher, in case you don't know this, because it is user managed, generated in terms of the data, type in a company that's not already like captured in their database. I don't know if this is like a bug, but it defaults to like, okay, if it's not here, we don't know that it's tied to whatever bad thing, bad people. The default says like you should be in the clear, which could be
right.
Like problematic, right? We've got to keep feeding it new data. We've got to keep interacting.
Right. Right. It's definitely user based. It needs to build up, you know, so if you know something that is bad, but the app says that it's not listed as bad, you can submit the report that it's bad and why, and any supporting documentation you may have. And then if enough of that comes in and they research this, they'll add that to that database. But just like anything else, there's going to be errors. There'll be some things, there's going to be people drinking the haterade that are going to put companies in there that shouldn't be in there. So, you know, do a little extra research to be sure if you need to.
I just realized too, earlier in this conversation, I used Google as a verb. I'm going to really try.
Me too. That's why I changed it.
Myself out of that. This is something that's come up in other conversations. Like, in addition to economic power, we also have something that is, you know, worth its weight in gold, which is our personal data, right? Our credit card numbers, but also our mailing addresses and our social security numbers and all of those things. Like, you know, in the absence of financial resources, we have those assets. They are valuable to the very corporations and systems and institutions that are victimizing us right now. So how do we take our power back? Not to get too soapboxy, but we're in the megaphone segment. Hello. Like, thanks for that, right?
Yeah.
It's a current challenge, right? I definitely want to change and ultimately terminate my relationship with some of these businesses, these brands. And
it's hard.
Whole ass process. So
yep.
I know this is going to come up in future podcast seasons and episodes. Spoiler, definitely incentive to stick around, but you know, putting that into practice, that is for me right now too daunting. Can't touch it right this minute. But what I can do is educate myself, invite people like you who have this perspective to have conversations about why it's important, why we should be thinking about these things. You know, certainly over the coming few years, like, we need to cling to whatever we have, including each other. And I think it starts with exactly what you're talking about. Like, at least it's an education. It's being able to make informed decisions, which does require a little bit more work, right? It's not just like a quick click the buy button, which is everywhere and available to everyone right now. It's a few more clicks, a few more scrolls, maybe an alternative beyond, you know, just name Google again.
And there's some people, well, the product is sold by a good company. Okay, but you're ordering it off of Amazon, so you're still not doing any justice. So keep that in mind too.
It's hard. And I also want to acknowledge people with scarce financial resources, limited.
Right. No judgment at all coming from me. If that is your only way, look, I still use them because financially, it's the only way I can get certain things right now because of my current situation. So please understand there's no judgment. I just wanted to point out that even if the product you're buying is from a great company, but you're getting it through Amazon, it's great that that product is through a great company, but we're still supporting Amazon, unfortunately. And I am in that boat as well. Yeah, I just wanted to clarify that.
No, absolutely. This is a judgment-free zone, right? I was just thinking, like, we're all aware of these. Well, hopefully most people are aware of this. As we're talking about it, I'm actively acknowledging that it's a privilege to be able to have the conversation about it. And I'm acknowledging that there are people who might be listening to this that represent that entire socioeconomic spectrum. There are people here listening, certainly, you know, with more quote unquote economic power than others. And for those people, you definitely have this opportunity. For the people who are anywhere else on the spectrum, know that this is what it's going to take: communicating about these things, asking for support when you need it, sharing resources.
I could go a whole hour about that.
We do have a little more time, and I think the best way, at least so far, that I've come up with to kind of wrap things up is really, like, I want to leave people not only with new information, right? We have fed their brains today. Absolutely tickled that gray matter. Really excited about that. And I want them to feel empowered to come away from this conversation and be able to do something about it, whatever it is. So we've touched on mental health, right? We've talked about structure loosely in a few different ways. We've talked about music, creativity, emotional expression. What advice do you have, insights, Christopher, anything that you want to shout from the rooftops as a suggestion to anyone who might be out there wondering, like, what can I do? I'm facing a similar challenge, or I'm hurting, I am angry. What do I do? What would you suggest?
Sometimes, and unfortunately, there aren't any things you can directly do to make any change, especially one quick enough that we want to see immediate results from. That's just not going to happen, unfortunately. But where we can do these immediate changes is within our own small little groups that we interact with every day. You know, we can start there, and hopefully, like, you know, watercolor, it just kind of spreads out and leaving beautifulness behind in its wake as it continues out. That's best.
What about even more local, even more closer to the heart than that, like our own mental health as individuals and as our these small groups, these communities, knowing what you've experienced, and what are you doing for your mental health? Or what might you suggest to others to make that a priority, no matter what's happening around us and in our lives?
That's hard. I'm allowing myself to be mad because everyone is typically, oh, you shouldn't get mad. You can't do anything about it. We're trying to teach that it's not okay to be mad. it's okay to be angry when some horrible, deplorable things are happening. Like, it is okay to get angry at that. And I'm trying to learn how to be angry, but within a structure that doesn't destroy my mental health. And when this shit is constantly happening every day, it's kind of hard. I mean, one of the physical things I could offer up is just limit social media usage, limit the screen time. And if you can't limit the screen time, at least try to limit the content if you can. That stuff keeps you in a hyper state. It keeps your fight or flight system on. And that's not a system that should be staying on constantly. Definitely not good for your body.
I love that you suggested limiting screen time. We've talked about our dependency on technology and this, you know, our closely enmeshed we are. Certainly the road trip experience gave me an opportunity to confront that. And that was part of the mission, right? Like actually moving away from the screen, which is ironic, right? We had planned to have this conversation while we were live and in person. And here we are across the country, two screens, and the experience of connecting with people makes a huge difference. But there's nothing like being able to be in the same physical space as a person. That's what it takes to get you out of the house, away from the computer or off your phone or whatever it is. Like, get the fuck outside, right? Make a little social calendar for yourself if you can, if you have the resources to do that, you're physically able to do that. Otherwise, maybe invite people to come to you, right?
Yes. I've been using this app to track my moods. It's pretty sweet.
There you go. Another, again, not sponsored by these people, but I would love to know because it is an actionable resource people can.
Yeah. And I believe to get all the features, you have to pay. But since it's through one of my medical providers, I don't have to pay. And as you answer the questions every day and do the little check-ins, you get points. And I've gotten like $15 in gift cards already. So it's kind of motivates you to track your mood. The name of the app, though, is Headlamp. One word, Headlamp.
Interesting. Okay.
And it's free through my provider. I mean, the cool thing is when I use the app every day, they get to see what I'm, you know, doing in the app. So they get to also track my moods and, you know, all that fun stuff. So it's great. So they check in. If they see something weird, they'll check in.
Very cool. Not only am I going to go back and watch those music videos back to back for the Johnny Cash song Hurt, Nine Inch Nails song, I'm also going to download that app, maybe just for the basic features and check it out. I think it's interesting to just be able to have everything centralized in one spot.
Again, yeah.
Personal data, right? It's pretty important data, but it's yours and you can learn things from it, right? And you can make decisions and you can mitigate some shit. More information you have, right? Knowledge is power is a cliche for a reason. Information is really important.
They made it a cliche because they don't want people to have knowledge because then they'll will have the power to figure out they're stupid.
It does make an impact.
Yeah, no, not stupid. They're just not good people. Be smart and not a good person. Those two things can happen at the same time.
That's very true. Thank you again, Christopher, for being here today, for sharing so generously. Is there anything else you want to leave listeners with before we wrap up here today?
Yeah, one thing I wanted to say when you do your whole homework with the song, depending on the current mood you're in when you do this exercise, that will also play into how you perceive each song. So kind of do a little baseline going into it, see what kind of your mood you're in before you do this, and then see if what you wrote down in the beginning, how you were feeling before you watched it, see if that matches with how it made you feel after you watched it. I'd be curious.
Ooh, I love that. Really kind of tying it all together, mental health and music. It's a cool combination. I'm gonna give a little plug here, a shout out to you, Christopher, for folks that are listening. Please take a look at the show notes for more about Christopher and a project that he's been working on that relates both to music and mental health. I won't spoil it for you here, but I will encourage you check out the show notes, learn more about Christopher and follow along the work that he's doing.
Attention Confidential is sponsored, produced, and distributed by Self Magnitude LLC, an ethical microbusiness on a mission to transform how you see yourself. It is hosted by Maggie Green, personal brand and style strategist for weirdos and queerdos of all ages and gender expressions, who is also the face and voice behind Self Magnitude, helping people feel seen since 2020. If you're looking for support on embodying all aspects of your identity and showing up as your radically authentic self in person, in print, and online, please visit Maggie's 100% DIY website at selfmagnitude.com. The original music, as featured on Attention Confidential, was written, composed, and produced by Christopher Colley Biondi, a deaf pianist, composer, and dear friend in Central Kentucky who generously provided his skills and talent to support the launch of this podcast. That's all for this episode of Attention Confidential, but of course, the conversation doesn't end here. I encourage you to keep exploring, keep questioning, and most of all, keep sharing your stories. If today's conversation spoke to you, please pass it on. And if you have a story of your own you'd like to showcase, I am here and ready to listen. You can find all past and future episodes at selfmagnitude.com/podcast. And until next time, remember this, your voice matters.